Radio Prague News.
Prime Minister Petr Nečas has told his Georgian counterpart, Nika Gilauri, that the Czech Republic supports Georgia's bid for NATO membership. Prague Mayor Bohuslav Svoboda has accused fellow civic democrat Boris Chastny of trying to destabilize the party in Prague. And police have confirmed that criminal proceedings have been launched over allegations of a corrupt pardon granted by President Václav Klaus. Prime Minister Petr Nečas has told his Georgian counterpart, Nika Gilauri, that the Czech Republic supports Georgia's bid for NATO membership. In a statement likely to irritate the country's northern neighbor Russia, Mr. Nečas told Prime Minister Gilauri that the Czech Republic, like other former Soviet bloc countries, had to overcome the same kind of Russian opposition to their joining NATO. Those countries' membership, he said, in the end contributed to the security and stability of Europe and did not lead to a conflict with Russia. The Russian Federation has long opposed Georgia's aspiration to join the alliance, primarily because of its numerous border disputes with the country, which led to open military conflict in 2008. Russian President Dmitry Medvedev will be visiting the Czech Republic at the beginning of December. Prague Mayor Bohuslav Svoboda has accused fellow civic democrat Boris Chastny of trying to destabilize the party in Prague. Mr. Svoboda's words came in reaction to statements made by Mr. Chastny at the weekend, in which he claimed that he had signals that the mayor and people close to him may be switching to the Topo 9 party. Mayor Svoboda said the comments were evidence of the fact that the Prague district leader of the Civic Democratic Party is trying to destabilize it at all costs, and that his supporters had signed the new coalition agreement based on support from their district associations. Boris Chastny initiated last week's collapse of the Grand Coalition at Prague City Hall, which many believe was intended to remove the mayor from his post. 3 days later, Mr. Svoboda negotiated a new coalition with the center-right Topo 9 party. The police presidium has confirmed that criminal proceedings have been launched over allegations of a corrupt pardon granted by President Václav Klaus. The police have declined to specify the exact crimes they believe were committed, saying only that two criminal acts are suspected and that no one has as yet been charged. The claims were first raised in early October by the weekly Respect, which reported on a pardon that might have been bought from the president's office for an ex-police officer who was to serve 2 years in jail for corruption. President Klaus has strongly denied the allegations. Now turning briefly to the weather, conditions over the coming days are expected to be clear, with highs of around 6 degrees Celsius. My name's Christian Falvey. That's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Peter Smith. Coming up in today's program, the so-called Ride of the Kings is inducted into the UNESCO list. And no, it's not a fairground ride. More on that soon. And Tomáš Berdych bows out in the semi-finals of the ATP World Tour in London. And later, we speak to the Slovenian philosopher Slavoj Žižek, an outspoken critic of global capitalism.
What is the dynamic of global capitalism so that in order for us to have a good life, some countries have to be treated like Congo?
Well, indeed. More on that coming soon. Please stay tuned to Radio Prague. The Czech Republic's Ride of the Kings, a tradition dating back centuries and still practiced in southeastern Moravia, was added at the weekend to UNESCO's list recognizing intangible cultural heritage. The ride, practiced in just 4 villages in the Slovačko region, refers to the flight of Hungarian King Mateusz Corvinus from the Czech King George of Poděbrady in the 15th century. Organisers had strived for years to see the tradition recognised, and following UNESCO's decision, had every reason to celebrate. Jan Wellinger has the details.
The Ride of Kings has survived throughout centuries, uninterrupted even during both world wars and 40 years of communism. But survive it did, a unique and colourful tradition practised now in only 4 Moravian villages, Hluk, Kunovice, Skoronice and Vlčnov. Held for the most part annually in Vulchnov since 1808, the ride is a rite of passage, also related to the flight of Hungarian King Matthias Corvinus from Czech King George of Poděbrady. A boy portraying the monarch dresses in a traditional women's folk costume to mask his identity. Sound here from one of the ceremonies. A cry there in favor of the king, Jiří of Poděbrady, or George of Poděbrady. Performing the role of the king is considered an honor, and the ride itself with its players and horses in traditional decorations and dress is a large part of what makes the Slovensko region unique. It's a festival found nowhere else. Jan Piáček is Vlčnov's mayor.
Má iniciační charakter.
The ride coincides with a former Celtic pagan ritual and has initiation characteristics. To be included on the list by UNESCO is certainly top certification. It recognizes the phenomenon or tradition as so unique that it transcends both the local community and national borders. It is something that makes us different from anywhere else and is part of the world heritage. To be included on the list is also a kind of thank you to those who kept the tradition alive down through time.
Locals greeted the news that the Ride of the Kings had been recognized jubilantly, with drinks being poured at the town hall and an announcement being made over the village speaker system.
Děkujeme všem, kteří se podíleli
na udržování této tradice.
One local, a key organizer behind the ride, called it the best development in the tradition in the 50 years that he has been involved. Jízda králů, or the Ride of the Kings, is the fourth Czech cultural tradition recognized by UNESCO, following one added in 2005 and two from last year. The former is a folk dance known as the verbuňk that originated in the 18th century and was practiced by military recruits, also in the Slovensko region. The other two are the Shrovetide, or carnival mask processions, in the region of Hlinsko, East Bohemia, and falconry, with roots in the great Moravian Empire in the 9th century.
Jan Wellinger there with that report on the Ride of the Kings that's been inducted into the UNESCO list. You're tuned to Radio Prague, and it's time now for another sports report, and this week it's presented by Jan Richter.
Czech football title holders Viktoria Plzeň beat the Belarusian champions Bate Borisov 1-0 in Minsk on Wednesday in their penultimate appearance in the Champion League's Group H. Realizing that only a win could move them up to third place in the group, Plzeň pushed hard for a goal, which came in the 42nd minute when the Slovak forward Marek Bakoš got the ball inside the box and swept it in. Plzeň then managed to fend off the home side's efforts to equalize and maintain their historic Champions League win. After the game, when reporters asked Marek Bakoš whether he would always remember his winning goal, the striker said it was too early to say.
I'm not thinking about that because I'm so happy that we won, and it was a very difficult game. But maybe in the future it will be nice to see in the statistics that I scored the winning goal. The most important thing was that Milan Petržela managed to get past a defender, past the ball to where the strikers should be, and I was able to put it in.
The Czech champions have no chance of advancing to the Champions League's knockout stage in the spring, but Wednesday's victory over Borisov means they will most probably finish third in their group and continue in UEFA's Europa League, provided Bate Borisov does not beat Barcelona. In their final appearance in the Champions League, Plzeň host AC Milan in Prague on the 6th of December. Turning to tennis now, where Tomáš Berdych became the first Czech tennis player after Ivan Lendl to reach the semifinals at the ATP's World Tour Finals in London. But on Saturday, his bid to book the final ended right there. On his way to the semis, the Czech lost to world's number one Novak Djokovic after failing to convert a match point. He then beat Janko Tipsarevic, the Serbian substitute for Andy Murray, and finally the Spaniard David Ferrer. But France's Jobel Fritzonga proved too much for the Czech, who lost 6-3 and 7-5. Tomáš Berdych later told the ATP website he did not feel well on the match day.
I'm pleased with this week, and it was a great experience for me, and you know, maybe a bit sad, you know, to have a match point against world number one first day, and then it could be almost the perfect run through the group, but anyway, I won the group as well, and you know, my first semi-final this event. I could feel better today, but does not happen, and that's it. You know, you have to be ready for a whole week, not just a certain days, and that's it.
In the sport of ice hockey, 13 out of 14 Czech top division clubs last week voted against a proposal to accept two Slovak clubs into the competition and revive the Federal Czechoslovak Hockey League. The idea, which has appeared several times in the past, came this time from the Slovak clubs HC Košice and Slovan Bratislava. Their Czech counterparts, however, quoted uncertain economic prospects of the joint league as the reason why, for the time being, no Slovak clubs will be admitted into the Tipsport Extraliga. And finally, in motorsport, 24-year-old Jan Charouz on Friday became only the third Czech racing driver, after Tomáš Enge and Josef Král, to appear in a Formula One event. The upcoming Czech pilot joined the Formula One circuit at the Brazilian Grand Prix, albeit only for a training session, when he took part in Friday's free practice run at the Interlagos circuit. Jan Charouz, who was a testing pilot for the Renault team last year, drove for the Hispania racing team at the Brazilian Grand Prix. Although he finished last, 5.7 seconds after the session's winner Mark Webber, the promising Czech driver said he made no serious errors during the 37 laps he drove, and that he enjoyed the experience, adding that he hoped the stint might get him a permanent seat in a Formula One car in the future.
Jan Richter there with a week of sport in Monday's Sport, of course. Now, in this week's edition of One on One, we talked to the Slovenian thinker Slavoj Žižek, who's been described as the most dangerous philosopher in the West. He criticizes global capitalism and warns of the dangers it presents for today's democracy. Slavoj Žižek recently arrived in Prague to launch a Czech translation of his latest book entitled First Tragedy, Then Farce. Czech Radio's Petr Dudek spoke to Slavoj Žižek during his Prague visit and first asked him about his views on the Occupy Wall Street movement in the US.
First, I don't idealize that movement. It's clear that there, the young people, or not only young people there, they are more or less totally confused. They don't have any clear idea. What is important for me is only this, that for the first time there is kind of a large movement which raises the crucial question about the system itself. It's not only there are, I don't know, corrupted companies which pollute environment, banks which are cheating, whatever. The question clearly became the system as such, what to do with it. Or, what even some sociologists admit, we have more and more a gap between our institutionalized democratic system and what goes on in economy. Economy, financial speculation, etc., is escaping any democratic control.
When we speak about 1989, we commemorate the 17th of November here in Prague. We all saw it as the end of a totalitarian state and as a return of democracy to then Czechoslovakia or Central Europe in general. You, in your book, First as Tragedy, Then as Farce, refer to the 1989 events as an obscure catastrophe. Is it the right term?
No. First, let me be very clear here. In my own country, I participated in those events. I have no nostalgia for 20th century communism, which is why I ironically refer to Lenin. He wrote one nice text about defeat where he said, when we got stuck, it's like climbing a mountain. You have to go down to the very beginning and start new again. This is the left today, what the left has to do. While I fully sympathize with your Velvet Revolution, the problem is, again, this gap. People expected something. That something was justice, solidarity, freedom, dignity. Of course, we didn't get that. Now we can read this gap in two ways. The official way, which is, this is simply a question of maturity. People there expected too much. Now we have to learn what really capitalism is. Not only welfare, consumerism, but also hard work and so on. But the fact that people, even in developed countries, are now more and more dissatisfied that obviously there is something wrong with global capitalist system, this maybe allows us to say that the fight of the Velvet Revolution goes on. The fight is not over. You know what is my main argument here when people accuse me of communist nostalgia? I say, no, take the example of China. Isn't this the wonderful, ironic reply to Fukuyama? Yes, capitalism won, but it looks today as if the best managers of capitalism are communists. Much more efficient than Western liberal democracies. This is what worries me.
In your speech on Wall Street last month, you asked a few questions, but you did not answer. You asked, what social organization can replace capitalism? Do you have an answer?
I'm here extremely honest. No, I don't have a clear answer. All I know is that, A, the answers of 20th century, all of them, not only the two big answers, that is to say, communism and welfare social democracy, but also, you know, this leftist dream of direct democracy, Soviets, councils, local self-organization, also doesn't work. It's not the global answer. All I'm saying is that we will be pushed to do something. When people tell me, oh, you are dreaming, I tell them, no, the true dream is that things can go on indefinitely the way they are. I would say if we can sustain the dream that some kind of Scandinavian welfare state social democracy can gradually expand to entire world, I would be the first to say then, who needs a communist revolution then? What I'm unfortunately saying is that there are, how do you put it, signs on the wall all around.
Messages.
Ecology, apartheid, new forms of exclusion and so on. Or even problems like biogenetics, intellectual property.
So to understand you even better, you don't have an answer to your question about a social organization which could replace capitalism. But you are still convinced that there is an urgency to ask such a question. That
precisely.
Capitalism should be replaced by some other social organization.
Not should
is that
be.
Right?
The alternative is then a new authoritarian era. It will not be the... I don't like to use the term fascism. Fascism is something very specific. But, for example, did you notice how the answer to crisis a couple of days ago, was what, both in Greece and Italy, purely apolitical technocratic government. This is a very sad sign how our societies are getting depoliticized. They say, no, technocratic managers should take over. This will be, I think, a vision of new authoritarian system, where democracy may even survive as a forum.
You speak about an authoritarian system. Do you imagine that it would be an authoritarian system led by the technocrats like Mario Monti, for example? Do I understand you right?
This combined with security people, terrorist threat and so on, and of course with all the freedoms in the private sphere.
But not for the general public.
Up to a point, no, but no, also for the general public in the private sphere. You can have your sexual perversities, gay marriages, all that is okay, whatever. But the problem will be the control of the population. What makes me a pessimist is that I think that less and less capitalism itself can afford universal democracy. For example, when people ask me, why are you against global capitalism? I tell them, if you want to talk about global capitalism, don't just focus on the developed country. Let's speak about Congo, which is a nightmare on earth. The state doesn't function.
Absolutely.
But Congo is not excluded. Congo is fully included into global capitalist system. This is we should ask. Why does global capitalism, or what is the dynamic of global capitalism so that in order for us to have a good life, some countries have to be treated like Congo?
Going back to Italy and Spain, for example, Ireland, not only Greece. There is, seems to be large and enlarging debt crisis in Europe. Do you think, what do you think about the European integration as an idea?
This may surprise
it something
you.
Which is
I always
healthy?
Defined myself as a leftist Eurocentrist. I think
does that mean that you keep your fingers crossed for the European Union?
Absolutely. My solution is here that the one which some social democrats or old leftists are advocating, like, I don't know, Daniel Cohn-Bendit, Joschka Fischer, United States of Europe. Because I think...
So where did we make the mistake in integrating Europe, in getting Europe together?
This may surprise you, but I think the mistake is that not that Europe wanted to be, as your president, if I understand him correctly, claims, you know who is your president?
But
the guy,
course, yes.
The guy in front of whom it's better not to leave your pen. No, that guy, yeah. Not as he claims too strong Europe, they want to... No, Europe was not conceived as strong enough entity.
Yes.
We have two alternate visions of Europe now. Either the Europe of this Brussels purely technocratic union, or conservative counterattack, more stronger national identities, and so on and so on. I think that what opened up the space for this anti-immigrant populist nationalist trend is precisely that Europe was defined by those in power in two purely technocratic terms. Europe should not be only economy, it should also have embody a certain radical emancipatory potential. Because, as I like to say, the big choice today, to put it bluntly, is either Anglo-Saxon neoliberalism or the new, what we poetically call capitalism with Asian values, which means authoritarian capitalism. Well, frankly, I wouldn't like to live in a world where this is the only choice. And Europe, weak as it is, it doesn't know what it wants and so on, maybe there is still a hope that something new, something which will be a vision of a new society which is neither simply neoliberal nor authoritarian, will emerge. One has to, we live in desperate times. As I already said, and you pointed out, I don't offer clear solution. Once I even mockingly described myself as a magician who is all the time dancing with the hat, but the rabbit never emerges from the hat. No?
When one reads your articles or listens to your speeches, one can hardly fail to notice that you very often refer to movies. Why do films inspire you so much? Why not literature or music?
There are many reasons, but the main reason is I'm more and more convinced that if you want to get a direct grasp of where do we stand today ideologically, it's movies, it's Hollywood. You get there today's ideology in a cleaner, more distilled form than in reality itself.
But you could easily say that what you see in a cinema is an illusion, isn't it?
Yeah, but you know, now I would have to go into psychoanalytic theory. For me, truth has the structure of an illusion. You know what? It's nothing mystical that I mean by this, but you remember how, for example, let's say that I have certain secret desires. I'm ashamed to put them openly. Let's say that someone tell me, write a story. There, because it will not, it will appear only as a fiction,
yes.
It will be possible for
not
me to openly say a confession. You know, if it's not attributed to you, it's much easier to tell the truth. There is something like this with cinematic fiction, I claim. It's really, you get everything, and precisely not in serious dramas. Like my big examples are Kung Fu Panda or these horrible films of the last year, like King's Speech, which is the whole film is about reasserting paternal authority.
Do you know any Czech or Czechoslovak film directors you would
are
like?
You crazy. They were my first great love, and I think it's a great example of how, although I admire Hollywood, of how the West can destroy you. I'm of course talking about Miloš Forman. My absolute hit are still his three, Black Peter, Lasky, Plavolasky, and then that Fireman's Ball.
Fireman's Ball,
yes. This is the work of a genius. Then I still like his first American film, Taking Off, because he tried to read American middle classes through the Czech glasses. It's the same universe and it works wonderfully.
But it didn't work in the United States. I think it was a disaster.
That's the
commercially.
Tragedy. I don't like Amadeus. It's just commercial. Yes. I don't like One Flew Over Cuckoo's Nest. And it's not only Forman. It's the same with Krzysztof Kieślowski. His, even if they were shot under horrible oppression of Jaruzelski, his films from the 80s, Decalogue and so on, Blind Chance, are, I think, much better than those soft pornographic films. He basically, I will be very cynical, Kieślowski, shot them to be able to seduce the beautiful actresses, Juliette Binoche and so on. No. I think that this is maybe paradoxically, no nostalgia for real socialism, but this is maybe the greatest tragedy of the fall of communism, that in those oppressive constellations, nonetheless, there was something which solicited through art. And then people thought wrongly, oh, now we have freedom, all the oppressed spirituality will explode. No, it didn't.
One-on-One this week was Slavoj Žižek, and he was in conversation with Czech Radio's Petr Dudek. You're tuned to Radio Prague, and it's time for another, well, learn the Czech language through music. Yes, it's Soundcheck, and this week is presented by Daniela Lazarova.
Yo, každý ráno u novin zaznamenávám dějin postup.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague's Czech language series, in which you can learn new phrases with the help of song lyrics. Today's rap song is by Bo Wave, and the phrase to listen out for is On umí vařit z vody. On umí vařit z vody means he knows how to cook from water and refers to the fact that someone has a knack for making something out of nothing. Being able to do that requires plenty of improvisation and the result is never trustworthy. People who find themselves in that situation may say, něco si vycucám z prstu, I will have to suck my finger for an idea. Or, budu mlžit, I will create a smokescreen. In this rap song, the ability to cook from plain water is attributed to politicians, who very often blab for hours about nothing. But to move on to something more substantial, if you hear someone using the expression stavět na zelené louce, they are building something from scratch on an empty green meadow, and it does not necessarily refer to construction work. While stavět na klíč, to build on a key, means to engage in a turnkey project. If you hear someone say that they're sewing with a hot needle, šít horkou jehlou, they're saying that they're working in a great hurry to meet a deadline. In other words, they're sewing so quickly their needle is hot with the effort.
Slibuje, že napraví všechny škody, aby on umí vařit z vody.
And finally, you can get grandiose plans that never hope to materialize. People who make unrealistic plans, staví vzdušné zámky, they build castles in the air. I hope your plans are more substantial than that and don't leave you cooking from plain water. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for learning Czech with me and naschledanou.
Slibuje, že napraví všechny škody, aby on umí vařit z vody.
That's Soundcheck here on Radio Prague from me, Peter Smith, on a lovely autumnal day. Till next time, bye-bye.